Coming up on the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast, Indiana University's new history-making president joins us in studio. Northeast Indiana looks to revitalize its restaurants. We take you inside a botanical-themed hotel. New dining options are coming to 16 Tech. Our Hoosier High School graduates prepared for higher education. We look at Indiana athletes headed to the Tokyo Olympics and preview the 4th annual Indie Shorts International Film Festival. Welcome to the Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. I'm Andy Ober. Pamela Witten took over as Indiana University's 19th president early this month, becoming the first woman to lead the university. She spoke with Inside Indiana Business host Gary Dick about what attracted her to the job and what her goals are for the university.
I mentioned after arriving in Indiana earlier this month in July, you have been on a whirlwind tour, all IU campuses. I know I saw social media was abuzz with you meeting all of the IU athletic coaches. Mm-hmm. So you've really gotten around the state. Mm-hmm. Your first reactions to your interactions.
It is great. I am so greatly impressed with Hoosiers across the state. I mean, people are warm and they're welcoming and they're excited. And I'll tell you, there's a lot of love around the state for Indiana University.
Yeah. Well, what attracted you to this job and to pursue the job at IU?
Well, I have an interesting background, and you know, I think sometimes it's a bit of luck in terms of experiences I've had. So I've worked at KU Medical Center, so I had experience in academic medicine. I spent many years at Michigan State as a college professor, and so had that experience in the Midwest and the Big Ten. I went down to the University of Georgia to be provost, mm-hmm. which was all about really working at the flagship and elevating mm-hmm. Research, and then eventually becoming the president at Kennesaw State, an urban-based, very large university. And all of that together was kind of a sweet spot for what Indiana University is.
Yeah, well, you mentioned elevating research because at Kennesaw State in Georgia, you elevated that university to a research institution. Mm-hmm. As you look at IU and the opportunities here, certainly research, a big part of what IU is all about. They're attracting record dollars as well there. Do you see research as a real opportunity going forward?
It is. It is. And it's such an important mission for the university. I mean, it's, you know, part of our role is certainly to make discoveries and to find things and to create things that really impact the quality of life for folks in Indiana, but also around the world as well. And so we have a phenomenal range of research that goes on, and I'm looking forward to seeing how we're going to elevate that.
That research has economic impact, to be sure, in the state. Your thoughts, your vision as you look at IU continuing to connect in communities mm-hmm. around the state mm-hmm. and to help drive economic development, do you see that as a focus?
It's a really important platform and part of the footprint of the university. And we're really well positioned. Now, you know, if you look mm-hmm. at our outreach to the state, you know, between Bloomington and a wonderful campus in Indianapolis, you know, we also have 5 regional schools mm-hmm. that are top notch, great quality in really important parts of the state, mm-hmm. right? You know, ranging from Northwest to Kokomo, you know, down mm-hmm. down to Southeast. Mm-hmm. And in addition to providing an amazing education for students in those areas, those are also important parts of the role that we play in really serving communities in Indiana.
Yeah. I know you wanted to make sure we talked about you as a student-centered president. That's important to you, that interaction, that connection to students.
It is. It is. And so, you know, I started in this job July 1st officially. And from July 1st on at Indiana University, I want to make sure that everyone understands that students are the center of the universe at our institution. Mm-hmm. Everything we do, every decision we make, we're going to ask, how does this benefit students?
Mm-hmm. As you look at additional opportunities going forward, I know you're brand new into the role mm-hmm. and into the job, but where do you see real opportunities going forward at Indiana University?
I really think there are opportunities across the 3 primary missions, right? So first and foremost is serving students. Mm-hmm. So we have opportunity to look at student outcomes right now and see where there's improvement. Also, the student experience. And the second part of our mission, of course, is research and discovery, and we've talked mm-hmm. about that already for a second. And then the third is making sure that we are an important and effective partner to the state in really elevating life throughout the state, mm-hmm. whether it's economic vitality, certainly whether it's quality of life through, you mm-hmm. know, through health for folks, as well as cultural.
Yeah. As you look at the fall semester thing, getting back mm-hmm. finally to normal, this will be your first fall here, but your thoughts as Indiana University and other colleges, universities open up for business this year?
It is going to be such a wonderful and joyous time in August when we start start school again. And it's important, you know, to acknowledge what a great job everybody did navigating through a time when nobody really had the answers and doing so safely. And as we come back to campus, we're ready to open back up again. Now, we'll be watching things and we'll adjust if necessary, but we're ready for full classrooms and a full football stadium, you know, and everything in between.
I know you'll be at football games, too, starting out. A lot of interest in those that football team this year. Pamela Whitten is IU's 19th president. President Whitten, really appreciate you taking the time to stop here for your first television interview. Look forward to having you many times in the
future. Thank you. Appreciate it.
The restaurant and food service industry took a major hit during the pandemic, with sales falling by the billions. The Northeast Indiana Innovation Center is trying to help the sector rebound through its Restaurant Revitalization Speaker Series. Interim President and CEO Ted Baker joined us to talk about how the center is helping the industry rebound.
I think we all know the impact has been devastating to the restaurant and food service sectors around the country, certainly here in Indiana. And Northeast Indiana has not escaped the impact, the really dramatic impact there as well.
Sure. And it is true. As of December 2020, there are over 110,000 eating establishments that have closed. This is nationwide, but we're seeing a very, very large impact within Indiana and Northeast Indiana. I don't think there's one sector of Indiana or the country that has not been affected by this. And so the women who run the Women Business Center for the Empower program at the NIC, the Northeast Indiana Innovation Center, said, maybe we can do something about this. And so they put this program together, and it's got some really good success.
Well, let's talk about that, because really it was born out of just hearing these and seeing these numbers, seeing these restaurants and bars and others essentially shut down, that prompted this speaker series. What's it all about? And talk about the impact, too.
Well, first of all, it was created by an employee of the NIC. Her name is Sarah Lance. And Sarah has a brother who has been in the industry and very much so in the Fort Wayne area. And she watched him go through this tragedy and the struggles and such. And he worked hard. He kept things going. And so from this, she thought, well, his story could be shared with others. And so this is what has happened. And so there are a total of five series talks, and they're all by restaurant and industry professionals. These are people with feet on the street who are doing the difference making every single day.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the impact been, Ted, as you look at it, and the ability for restaurants and bars and other venues in Northeast Indiana to connect with this series?
Well, I think it gives them a voice. It gives them hope. It gives them a little bit of, hey, maybe we can get through this. We can get through this together. And so one person's story, one person's struggle, one person's success may make a difference in another person who is still going through that. It has also led to a lot of connections with each other. One of the things we found out, and Hoosiers are really, really good at this, and that is we don't have to walk these journeys alone. And so this program, very, very popular, a lot of feedback from this and a lot of interest, is that people are learning to connect with each other to get through this.
Very good. Ted Baker, the interim president and CEO at the Northeast Indiana Innovation Center, an organization, an entity that has been doing some great things in the innovation space for a long, long time. Ted, appreciate you taking the time and look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you, Gary.
Northeast Indiana's newest boutique hotel opened its doors to guests last week. The botanical-themed Bradley Hotel is Fort Wayne's newest addition to its waterfront revitalization efforts. Around Indiana reporter Mary Rachel Redmond takes us there.
Nearly 40 years ago, she started a company that continues to bring bright patterned luggage and handbags to the masses.
Vera Bradley.
Now the genius behind the iconic Vera Bradley line has officially opened downtown Fort Wayne's first boutique hotel.
I've lived in Fort Wayne now for over 40 years, and we were just missing that element of a city, and I didn't think there was anything that really represented who we were.
So after retiring as chief creative officer for the Fort Wayne-based lifestyle brand in 2017,
I think of these things.
Mind you, in her late 70s, Barbara Bradley Backer decided it was high time to embark on her 30-year dream to build a hotel that reflected her own home in the heart of downtown.
I was in the company every single day for 30 years. And then as we got bigger and we hired other people to do some of the things that I did, I could get away a little more. So then I started having these other ambitions, you know, like, why not do it now?
And that she did. The Bradley is a $30 million full-service boutique hotel that features 124 guest rooms, 9 suites, and a host of public spaces, including 2 restaurants and a rooftop bar.
Restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Birdie's.
Yeah.
And there's a special reason why it's called Birdie's.
Well, my grandchildren call me Birdie. My oldest grandson nicknamed me Birdie because when he came to my house, I had prints, fabrics, and my dinnerware had birds on it. So when they say we're going to grandma's, he'd say, oh, Grandma Birdie. So it stuck. And now I have 12 grandchildren. They all call me Birdie.
That's kind of the inspiration here, too.
When you come off the elevator here, you see some bird prints, which is really fun. I know, it's cute. It's fun. This is your typical guest room.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And I can already see the headboard. That is vintage Vera Bradley.
This would be like you're coming into my home and staying in my house.
So did you personally pick out what's in each room?
I did.
You've got great taste, I must say.
It looks Vera Bradley without screaming Vera Bradley. It's more of a wink than a shout.
So in terms of color schemes, is it a lot of blues?
I always say it's blue always works. I said God knew what he was doing. You know, blue works for decor. I don't think there are many people that walk into a blue room and don't think it feels cozy. Yeah, I'm really proud of the bathrooms. The showers are amazing. The hardware on the showers. Yeah. Wouldn't you be pleased to check in here?
Yeah. Can I pinch my tickets?
Yeah. You can make a reservation.
Yeah. Barbara staying in town. And her commitment to our city, I think, speaks volumes about her. I've already talked to a number of CEOs who bring in important people to stay in our community for a few days. They're very excited about this new offering.
I wanted something that when people were in here, they felt they knew where they were, Fort Wayne. And then when they leave, they have a memory of Fort Wayne. And that was one of my goals.
Mary Rachel Redman, Inside Indiana Business.
An artisan marketplace and food hall in the 16 Tech Innovation District in downtown Indianapolis has added 7 tenants, including a taqueria, fusion cuisine concept, and natural drink bar. General Manager Craig Baker came on the show with more.
We visited with you actually more than a year ago and took the show out to 16 Tech and could see the concept and what the AMP was all about. But now it is really happening. It's coming to life. As we talked off camera, you've got 23 spots. 22 of those 23 are filled with a variety of restaurants and eateries. Talk about the momentum.
You know, it's interesting that, you know, all through COVID, we've been able to develop this marketplace. It's definitely focused. We do have some grocery components. We've got a fish market, a bunch of other stuff, a bakery. But, you know, really what's coming together is a community, a real sense of community between the vendors and then, you know, just reaching out to the neighborhoods around us to get people in and expose them to all the different offerings.
And interesting, too, and we're seeing some video now, but the concept and how you're putting this together, shipping containers, right, are used as part of the development of the AMP.
Yeah, 15 of the different venues are housed inside shipping containers, 20 and 40-foot containers. We use them to kind of delineate the space, but I really feel like once you put a roof on something, it gives people the experience that it makes it their own.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk about 16 Tech. It is a live, work, innovate community, if you will. Probably the largest talent attraction initiative ever in Indianapolis, looking to leverage a lot of the resources in that area from the IU Med Center, the academic resources and all those types of things close to downtown Indianapolis. The AMP, this marketplace, which is also next to a maker space, 1776 is there. It's part of the equation, I guess you can say. How important is the AMP, is having a food and component to the success of 16 Tech?
Well, I always like refer to the AMP as the living room of 16 Tech. So it's really the amenity center. It's a gathering place. We have a stage so we can host events, whether it's a company doing like a launch party. We can have, speaking engagements, that kind of thing. It's very large. So our standing room capacity, I think, is 1,200 people or close to it. So, we can do large community events and host things for nonprofits and other, engagements that a lot of other places just can't handle.
Yeah, and as we wrap up, Craig, for those who haven't been over there, buildings are up. Things are actually happening. As you said, you're attracting in the AMP, the marketplace there, about 300-plus people a day for lunch. So there's a lot of activity taking place at 16 Tech.
Yeah, and again, we stay open into the evening, and we're getting a lot of people bringing happy hours and corporate groups and that kind of thing. So, it really is a place to come and gather and experience the different cuisines that we have through people who are all new restaurateurs.
Craig Baker is the concept developer and general manager at the AMP. Very interesting concept at 16 Tech where things are happening. Craig, great to see you. We look forward to having you on again in the future.
You got it. Thanks again.
All right.
Remember, you can catch Inside Indiana Business Television on stations throughout the state every weekend. Head to InsideIndianaBusiness.com to check listings. The City of Westfield and the Grand Park Sports Campus have launched the Grand Park Research and Development Hub. It's designed to serve entrepreneurs, businesses, and universities working on innovations in the sports tourism industry. Assistant Partner Coordinator Emily Cable joined Kylie Valletta in the Business of Health.
We think back to last summer. It was a tough summer for youth sports last year. So it's great to see Grand Park up and having all those kids there again.
Yes, yes.
So let's talk about how this whole idea came about for the Research Hub. How did you come up with this idea?
Yeah, so, as you mentioned, youth sports is a massive industry continuing to grow. Grand Park is one of the largest, if not the largest, sports facility of its kind in the country. And with that, we have, hundreds of events every year. Millions of visitors out at our campus every year. So we wanted to use those events and the data that we can collect from those events and the visitors that we have to benefit the rest of the sports industry. So we want to put that to good use and be able to partner with companies who can benefit from that information.
So let's talk a little bit more about these partnerships. Explain how they'll work, these partnerships between the hub and the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, so we really want to utilize all 400 acres of our campus as well as all of the events on campus to allow our partners to complete their research and development projects, whatever they have in mind. With the hub being so new, there's a lot of opportunity out there, and we're kind of excited to see where it takes us.
So there's commercial ideas being developed there, but also research is a big piece of this, and the IUPUI Sports Innovation Institute is your first university partner.
Yeah.
Why did Grand Park also want to make research a part of this?
Yeah, like I mentioned, we have so many events and visitors out on campus, which gives us kind of a large pool of potential research subjects. So we feel that can allow our partners to vet any technology ideas that they might have or potential just research ideas.
So I know that it's really just getting off the ground, but what has interest been like so far?
Oh, we've had tremendous interest in it so far, and we're starting to just initially get those conversations going with new partners.
Okay, I know lots of parents and kids out there frequently, so I'm sure there's lots of ideas churning.
Oh, yeah.
It's just getting off the ground, but what is your vision for the future for the Research and Development Hub?
Yeah, so we obviously want to grow our partnership base. We have a few partners right now, we have a few in the works, and I'm sure, like you said, there's a lot of people out there that are just now hearing about this that, we'll start to get some more interest. So we want to grow that partnership base. We want to continue to work with the current partners to further develop their ideas. Like I said, it's just a brand new idea that we're excited to get going.
So, Grand Park at one point was a brand new idea too, and sure has grown. Just big picture, how does this really plug into Grand Park's mission?
Yeah, so Grand Park was created to provide an economic base for Westfield, and it's done that, more than we could imagine. So we want to continue to do that for Westfield, but we, fully expect that the hub will be the next big thing out of Westfield.
So if people see this and they're interested, entrepreneurs or researchers, what should they do?
Yeah, they can go to our website. It's grandpark.org/hub, and we have an inquiry form on there that they can fill out. It'll come to us, and then hopefully we can get the initial conversation started.
All right, so I know you're involved there with the partners. What are you most excited about seeing
this launch?
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you know, just the few partners that we have right now and seeing all the different ideas out there. I'm obviously excited to continue to work with them, but to see, you know, what potential partners we have in the works and just where it takes us down the road.
It'll be fun to see the new ideas come
yes,
out of there.
Yeah.
Well, Emily, thanks for being on the show today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
A new study shows Indiana high school graduates have become more diverse over the last 10 years, but those from underrepresented communities are not equally prepared for the challenges of post-secondary education. Indiana Commissioner for Higher Education Teresa Lubbers joined us with more on the 2021 College Equity Report.
This equity report, talk about the importance, because this is the fourth year that you've put out this report. Why is this important? What does it really give you insight into?
Well, it shows where we really need to double down on our efforts to make sure that all Hoosiers have the opportunity for economic mobility that comes with education beyond high school. Mm-hmm. So we disaggregate our reports by race and ethnicity, gender, geography, and socioeconomic status. And we look at how individuals are doing. Are they prepared to go to college? Mm-hmm. Are they accessing college? Are they succeeding in college? And then are they getting a job afterward that provides yeah. economic mobility? And this study attempts to do all of those yeah. things.
A lot of information we can dive into. As mentioned in the introduction there, more diverse, more low income, but students not really prepared for the rigors, the challenges of post-secondary education.
I'll look at a couple of data points that I think are interesting mm-hmm. in this regard. We look, for example, at the number of students who graduate from high school with a waiver. We've seen a significant increase. 1 in 8 students graduated from high school with a waiver. 1 in 4 black students graduated from high school with a waiver. 1 in 5 Hispanics did. And we know that there are some legitimate reasons for a waiver diploma, but it doesn't prepare you for education in higher education, at least. We also know that our minority students aren't as likely to take academic honors or dual credit. So that's an issue for us as well. They're not as likely to get the academic honors diploma. There's about a 20% gap with minorities in terms of getting the academic honors diploma. It's not the only pathway to college, but it is the surest way to be prepared for college. So we're looking at everything like encouraging people to take early college credit, you know, discouraging the waiver diploma at that level, making sure more students are taking the academic honors diploma.
Yeah. Also some interesting stats on college going, and especially when it comes to the number of men going versus women mm-hmm. going to college.
Well, we've seen an overall decrease. It's been coming for several years. It's been a trend. We've seen about a 6% decrease in the last 5 years, from 65% down to 59%. So this was very concerning. But if you look at by gender, 65% of women graduating from high school are going on to higher education, 51% of men. And that number is even lower for black and Hispanic men. Mm-hmm. So where are all the men? We need
yeah.
them back.
Yeah. A number of things we can dive into there. And as you look at the equity gaps closing, but again, certain groups not taking part in that post-secondary education. And as you look at the big goal mm-hmm. and your big goal of wanting 60% of Hoosiers with post-secondary education, a credential, those types of things. Where does Indiana stand in that? And how is that important to what we're talking about here in terms of some of these other statistics?
Well, we have the big goal. 60% of Hoosiers would have a quality credential beyond high school by 2025. And that includes certificates and industry certifications and degrees. So we're looking at a broad range of that. We're at 48.3% right now. We know there's no way to get there without doing a better job with the individuals we've identified in this report, those who have been left behind, not fully participating mm-hmm. in higher education. And we also need more adults to come back. That goal has been established because of the workforce needs. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, we didn't just pick 60%. And let's be honest, when we get to 2025, that goal will probably move up.
Yeah. Well, and as we wrap up, the importance of these numbers, because sometimes you look at reports that get put on the shelves and numbers kind of, you know, people's eyes gloss over. But there's real importance in what we're talking about here to the whole workforce and the whole workforce pipeline issue that everybody talks about.
Well, this is a game changer for individuals. Hoosiers are going to be left behind. So personal prosperity and well-being depends on closing these gaps. Mm-hmm. We can't meet the needs for employers for the workforce they need in the 21st century unless people have the skills and credentials they need. need. And then as a state economy, as we need to strengthen our economy, it all comes back to a better prepared workforce.
Yeah. Do you think that the awareness on the part of academic institutions, employers, everyone is kind of rowing in the same direction now? Because I think there was a time when that wasn't the case. Do you think everyone understands this workforce issue is a serious one?
I think they do. In fact, we have a metric that 100% of our degrees and programs would have embedded career relevance, an internship, an apprenticeship. We're going to bring together in the fall employers and educators to look about what does career relevance mean? What do we have to make sure that our Hoosiers understand and have the skills to do in order to do the jobs that we know we want to have in advanced industries?
All right. Indiana Commission for Higher Education Commissioner Teresa Lubbers. 2021 College Equity Report, some interesting information. Thanks for joining us.
The pandemic-delayed Summer Olympic Games in Tokyo are finally set to take place, and they will have plenty of Indiana flavor. IndyStar sports writer David Woods joined Bill Benner with a preview on Inside Indiana Sports.
You and I go back to my Indianapolis Star days. You covered your first Olympics, and I covered my last Olympics in 1996 in Atlanta. So you've been at it a long time, but certainly this is a, as we said, a highly unusual Olympics with a year delay. What kind of impact do you think that's had overall on the aspiring Olympic athletes?
Well, I think for some younger Olympic athletes like Cole Hocker, a 20-year-old who's the youngest to represent the U.S. in the 1500 meters since 1968, there's no way he would have made the Olympic team last year. Well, this year he has an outside chance to medal. And then for some other athletes who are maybe on the older side, I know Andy Bayer, a former IU steeplechaser who I thought would make the team, retired earlier this year. He just couldn't make it go another year. So we've seen some of that. It's been good for some of the younger athletes, and then some of the older athletes, it's, you know, going that one extra year has been bad.
Yeah, and then they didn't even make the team,
right?
For example. David, Indiana seems to have a tremendous presence again this year. I know they had a strong contingent in Rio 5 years ago. But again, what does that say about Indy, the amateur sports movement? It seems like that's kind of the result of our emphasis on amateur sports in Indiana.
I think you can draw a line on some of that. I know the last Olympics was the most Indiana medalists I ever covered. Indiana-affiliated athletes won 19 medals, which would have put them like about 12th in the standings, ahead of Kenya, ahead of Spain, ahead of some really prominent nations in the Olympic sports world. And there could be just as many or more this time. Of course, that's including, you know, athletes from who went to Indiana colleges, some from other nations. We have like 9 fencers from Notre Dame who are representing, I think, U.S. and 3 other countries will be there. But I do think that it really does show that just the idea that not just football and basketball are important in this state, a lot of these other sports are important too. In fact, on the swimming team, the state with the most swimmers on the U.S. team, and I always tell people, you know how hard it is to make a U.S. Olympic swimming team? There are like 26 men on the team. There are 32 starting quarterbacks in the NFL.
Yeah.
Much harder to make the Olympic swim team. And seven on the U.S. team, men and women, are from California, 5 from Indiana, which is second.
That's fantastic. Of course, at the top of the Indiana contingent, you love her because she's outspoken, she's brash, and she's a hell of a swimmer, Lily King.
Lily King is trying to become the very first woman to win the 100-meter breaststroke gold medal at the Olympics on the women's side twice. It's never been done, but if there's anybody going to do it, it would be Lily King. She was good at the Olympic trials. I think she'll be better at the Olympics. Her training partner, Annie Laser, is one of her big rivals in the 200-meter breaststroke, an event that Lily has been terrible in, has never won a global medal in that event, but she's much better in that now. She might win 2 relay medals. I mean, Lily being Lily, you never want to underestimate what she could do, but she is really ready for these Olympics.
Chloe Dygert from Brownsburg, she was a silver medalist in Rio in a team event.
Team pursuit,
and coming back again from a horrific crash, so a great comeback story there.
Yeah, she's had all kinds of things beset her in the subsequent 5 years. She had a concussion in a 2018 crash, terrible crash at the Road World Championships in Italy last September, but she recently won a national title in individual time trial, which is her wheelhouse. So she has a chance to win gold medals on the track and on the road in cycling. And I really think she has a chance to be one of the big breakout stars of the entire Olympics for the entire U.S. contingent. But, you know, she's got to do it. And it's a little bit indeterminate what her fitness will be because of the setback that she had.
Less than a minute left. You mentioned Cole Hawker in your opening comments. But, again, a tremendous story, this young man exploding on the college stage and now an Olympian.
Yep, he defeated defending gold medalists Matthew Centrowitz in the Olympic trials at 1500 meters. He has tremendous closing speed. I mean, if you're one of the athletes from the other nations, you don't want to slow pace in the Olympic 1500 final, because Cole Hawker, the freight train, is going to be right on top of you.
Well, David Woods of the Indy Star, he will be covering all of these stories virtually because of a pandemic and other circumstances. But again, when I say prolific, this man is prolific in his coverage. And you can read all about our Indiana athletes through David Woods at the Indy Star. David, thanks for coming on.
And finally this week, Heartland Films' fourth annual Academy Award-qualifying Indie Shorts International Film Festival is right around the corner. This year's event will showcase more than 200 short films. Heartland Film Festival Artistic Director Greg Sorvig joined us with a preview.
And this is, I would say, kind of quietly become quite an event. Fourth annual event. These are films 40 minutes or less.
Right.
And the reaction and the interest in this is growing exponentially.
Yeah, definitely. And a lot of the films, I think we average 13 minutes per film. There's some that are longer, some that are shorter as well, but we package them into feature-length programs, 33. So they're all themed from comedy, Indiana films as well. But yeah, it's a great smorgasbord. You can see a program have a wide variety of different films.
And talk about the number of short films you had to kind of comb through, the number of submissions you had, because it's astronomical.
Yeah, it grows every year. We're an Oscar qualifier, and we got animated. So we qualify in the three main categories of animated, live action, and documentary. Since we got animated, submissions even went up in spite of COVID. So we had 3,300 short film submissions from all around the world, dozens and dozens of countries. So I'm the head prospector, if you will, at the top, looking for the Fool's Gold, the real McCoy as well, too. And we have volunteer pre-screeners watching films. We have people on staff that are watching films as well, going to festivals virtually this past year and now in person recently, too, looking for the best films to show here in Indy.
And you can legitimately say that the road to the Oscars runs through Indianapolis.
That is incredibly true. I think especially for short films, being a qualifier, if you win one of our grand prizes, you have this Wonka golden ticket. You get to leapfrog some of the requirements for the Academy, and you are immediately on the map for contention.
Yeah.
So we've had 8 winners, including one last year, If Anything Happens, I Love You, the animated film from Netflix, and 29 nominees in the past decade, which is phenomenal.
Wow, that is phenomenal. A lot of films we can talk about, but some big names in some of these films. Will Ferrell, we saw that in the introduction there. That's going to get a lot of attention.
Yeah, the film is fun. And Zach Woods, who's kind of my celebrity doppelganger from The Office in Silicon Valley, directed this film as well. So funny guy behind the camera. It's a fun dramedy. So Will Ferrell is a psychologist. He's in the middle of a meeting or session, and his son kind of interrupts, and it goes from there. And that's in the program, Well, This Is Awkward. So that's all different films within the program were kind of awkward or weird situations. So it's a fantastic film.
Also, Noah Reed.
Noah Reed's in a film called The Archivist. Yeah. It actually premiered, the world premiere was at Toronto last year. We have the U.S. premiere of this film. And it kind of ties in music as well. People in this kind of not too distant future that find a house and instruments, and they kind of go from there. So it's in this expressions program, kind of art, music, poetry, an eclectic mix of films.
Yeah. The event, the festival starts Tuesday, and there are a number of venues, including Bottleworks. So this will be a chance to really showcase one of the newest venues in town.
Yeah. Last year it was all virtual. We did some drive-in screenings. And, you know, being around for 3 decades, we pulled people who've been with us, our patrons, our members, and, you know, there's some reluctance to go back to theaters, but especially the last couple months have been fantastic. So we worked with the Bottle Works in their beautiful living room theaters, flagship location, for Fast and the Furious 9 a couple weeks ago, and it's beautiful. I mean, the whole area, Art Deco beauty is there, and it trickled over to the theater. State-of-the-art projection as well, too. So people come in, you're going to be impressed. Amazing bar, great food, and it's just, it looks like you're in a brand new theater. So if you know, people are like, are people going to come back to the theaters?
Yep.
Well, this is literally an all-new experience that people in Indianapolis and beyond can come and experience.
And the opportunities are varied, are diverse, because you've got the in-theater, you've got virtual, you've got outdoors. So lots of options to view these films.
Yeah, definitely. So virtual, I mean, you can watch it kind of Netflix-style a la carte at indieshorts.org from the 20th to the 25th. We have a night on Friday at the Indianapolis Arts Center, and then Saturday night we're going to be at the Indy French Theater outside, in addition to Bottle Works, too. We have panels as well with industry folks like Sheila Nevins from MTV Films. 76 Days was picked up at Heartland last year and is now Emmy-nominated, just won a Peabody, was Oscar shortlisted, so she'll be joining us for a panel, too. So a lot of opportunities in person and virtual.
Yeah, and the impact, the economic impact, the visibility for Indianapolis at an event like this, I think can translate into this whole talent initiative. You know, we want more people to stay here, live, work, and play here, to attract here. This adds to the quality of place equation for Indiana.
Yeah, I would say between the Heartland International Film Festival and Indy Shorts, we do have industry players and filmmakers coming to town who otherwise wouldn't be coming to Indianapolis, since we lack incentives. I think there is initiative, I mean, in maybe a driving force behind that. That might be something in the near future. But we do give a lot of cash prizes. We've given $3.5 million since 1992. Indy Shorts alone will give $32,000 next week, too. So, yes, we definitely, between the Oscar notoriety, having filmmakers come to town. And that's the other thing, too. We didn't know if filmmakers would be coming. We do have dozens of filmmakers confirmed to come to Indy as well. So we're very excited to welcome people back here in Indianapolis.
Indeed. The spotlight will be on Indianapolis for the Indy Shorts International Film Festival. Greg Sorvig is the artistic director at Heartland Film Festival. Greg, good luck with the event. I know it'll be a great event. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
All right.
That wraps up this week's Inside Indiana Business Television podcast. Remember, you can find all of this week's TV segments, as well as the top business news from throughout the state, at InsideIndianaBusiness.com. While you're there, you can also subscribe to our platform of free e-newsletters. This is Andy Ober for Inside Indiana Business.